she despise? Or which one would Shay think she despised? They both looked pretty ordinary to her. She squinted into the distance. Maybe one led toward something despicable that would be visible in daylight. But waiting would mean losing a night's travel, and sleeping in the cold and dark without a sleeping bag. Tally reminded herself the clue might not be about this junction. Maybe she should just stay on the big river until something more obvious came up. Why would Shay call the two rivers sides, anyway? If she'd meant this junction, wouldn't it be, take the direction you despise? The side you despise, Tally mumbled, remembering something. Her fingers went to her face. When she had showed Shay her pretty morphos, Tally had mentioned how she always started by doubling her left side, that she had always hated the right side of her face, which was exactly the sort of thing that Shay would remember. Was this Shay's way of telling her to take a right? Branching to the right was the smaller river, the tributary. The mountains were closer in that direction. Maybe she was drawing near the smoke. She stared at the two rivers in the darkness, one big and one small, and remembered Shay saying that pretty symmetry was silly, because she'd rather have a face with two different sides. Tally hadn't realized it at the time, but that had been an important conversation for Shay, the first time she had talked about wanting to stay ugly. If only Tally had noticed at the time, maybe she could have talked Shay out of running away, and they'd both be in a party tower right now, together, and pretty. Right it is, Tally sighed, and eased her board onto the smaller river. By the time the sun rose, Tally knew she had made the right choice. As the tributary climbed its way into the mountains, the fields around her filled with flowers. Soon the brilliant white bonnets were thick as grass, driving every other color from the landscape. In the dawn light, it was as if the earth were glowing from within. "And look in the flowers for firebug eyes," Tally said to herself, wondering if she should get off the board. Maybe there was some kind of bug with fiery eyes she should be looking for. She drifted to shore and stepped off. The flowers came right up to the edge of the water. Tally knelt to inspect one closely. The five long white petals curved delicately up from the stem and around its mouth, which contained just a hint of yellow deep inside. One of the petals below the mouth was longer, arching down, almost to the ground. Motion caught her eye, and she spotted a small bird hovering among the flowers, flitting from one to the next to alight on the longest petal, thrusting its beak into one after another. "They're so beautiful," she said, "and there were so many of them." She wanted to lie down in the flowers and sleep. But she couldn't see anything that might be firebug eyes. Tally stood, scanning the horizon. Nothing met her gaze but hills, blinding white with flowers, and the glimmering river climbing up into the mountains. It all looked so peaceful, a different world from the one that flying machine had shattered last night. She stepped back on the board and continued, slower now as she looked carefully for whatever might fit Shay's clue, remembering to stick on a sunblock patch as the sun rose higher. The river climbed higher into the hills. From up there, Tally saw bare stretches among the flowers, expanses of dry, sandy earth. The patchy landscape was a strange sight, like a beautiful painting that someone had taken sandpaper to. She got off her board several times to inspect the flowers, looking for insects or anything else that might match the words firebug eyes. But as the day wore on, nothing made sense. By the time noon approached, the tributary was gradually growing smaller. Sooner or later, she would reach its source, a mountain spring or melting snowdrift. Then she'd have to walk. Tired after the long night, she decided to make camp. Her eyes scanned the sky, wondering if any more of the rusty flying machines were around. The idea of another one crashing into her in her sleep terrified her. Who knew what the people inside the thing wanted? If she hadn't been hidden in the water the night before, what would they have done with her? One thing was certain. The shiny solar cells of the hoverboard would be obvious from the air. Tally checked the charge. More than half remained thanks to her slow speed and the bright sun now overhead. She unfolded the hoverboard, but only halfway, and hid it among the tallest flowers she could find. Then she hiked to the top of a nearby hill. From up there, Tally could keep her eye on the hoverboard and hear and see anything approaching from the air. She decided to repack her knapsack before she went to sleep, so she could bolt at a moment's notice. It was the best she could do. After a mildly revolting pack of spog bowl, Tally curled up in a spot where the white flowers were tall enough to hide her. The breeze stirred their long stalks, and shadows danced on her closed eyelids. Tally felt strangely exposed without her sleeping bag, lying there in her clothes, but the warm sun and the long night's travel put her quickly to sleep. When she awoke, the world was on fire. Firestorm. At first, there was a sound like a roaring wind in her dreams. Then a tearing noise filled the air. The crackle of dry brush inflamed, and the smell of smoke swept over Tally, bringing her suddenly and completely awake. Billowing clouds of smoke surrounded her, blotting out the sky. A ragged wall of flame moved through the flowers, giving off a wave of blistering heat. She grabbed her knapsack and stumbled down the hill away from the fire. Tally had no idea in which direction the river lay. Nothing was visible through the dense clouds. Her lungs fought for air in the foul brown smoke. Then she spotted a few rays from the setting sun breaching the billows, and she oriented herself. The river was back toward the flame, on the other side of the hill. Tally retraced her path to the top of the hill and peered down through the smoke. The fire was growing stronger. Fingers of it shot up the hill, leaping from one beautiful flower to another, leaving them scorched and black. Tally caught the glimmer of the river through the smoke, but the heat pushed her back. She stumbled down the other side again, coughing and spitting, one thought in her mind. Was her hoverboard already engulfed in flames? Tally had to get to the river. The water was the only place safe from the rampaging fire. If she couldn't go over the hill, maybe she could go around. She descended the slope at full tilt. There were a few spots burning on this side, but nothing like the galloping flame behind her. She reached level ground and made her way around the base of the hill, crouching low to the ground to duck under the smoke. Halfway around, she reached a blackened patch where the fire had already passed. The brittle stems of flowers crunched under her shoes, and the heat coming off the scorched earth stung her eyes. Her footsteps ignited with flame as she ran through the blackened flowers, like stabbing a poker into a slumbering fire. She felt her eyes drying, her face blistering. Moments later, Tally spotted the river. The fire stretched in an unbroken wall across the opposite shore, a roaring wind pressing at its back and sending embers flying across to a light on the near side. A rolling billow of smoke surged toward her, choking and blinding her until it passed. When her eyes could open again, Tally spotted the shiny solar surface of her hoverboard. She ran toward it, ignoring the burning flowers in her path. The board seemed untouched by the flame, protected by good luck and the layer of dew it collected every nightfall. She quickly folded the board and stepped onto it, not waiting for the yellow light to turn green. The heat had mostly dried it already, and it rose into the air at her command. Tally took the board over the river, just above the water, and skimmed her way upstream, looking for a break in the wall of fire to her left. Her grippy shoes were ruined. Their soles cracked like sun-baked mud, so she flew slowly, scooping up handfuls of water to soothe her burning face and arms. A noise thundered to life on Tally's left. Unmistakable, even above the roar of the fire. She and the board were caught in a sudden wind, shoved back to the other shore. Tally leaned hard against it and stuck a foot into the water to slow the board. She clung tightly with both hands, desperately fighting being thrown into the river. The smoke suddenly cleared, and a familiar shape loomed out of the darkness. It was the flying machine, its thundering beat now obvious above the raging fire. Sparks jumped across the river as the machine's windstorm stirred the fire to a new intensity. What were they doing? She wondered. Didn't they realize they were spreading the fire? Her question was answered a moment later when a gout of flame shot from the machine, squirting across the river to ignite another patch of flowers. They had set the fire and were driving it on every way they could. The flying machine thundered closer, and she glimpsed an inhuman face staring at her from the pilot seat. She turned her board to fly away, but the machine lifted up into the air, passing right over her, and suddenly the wind was too great. Tally pitched off and into the water. Her crash bracelets caught for a moment, holding her above the waves. But then the wind caught the hoverboard, much lighter without her on it, and spun it away like a leaf. She sank into the deep water in the middle of the river, knapsack and all. It was cool and quiet under the waves. For a few endless moments, Tally felt only relief to have escaped the searing wind, the thundering machine, the blistering heat of the firestorm. But the weight of the crash bracelets and knapsack pulled her down fast, and panic welled up in her pounding chest. She thrashed in the water, climbing up toward the flickering lights of the surface. Her wet clothes and gear dragged at her, but just as her lungs were about to burst, she broke the surface into the maelstrom. Tally gulped a few breaths of smoky air, then was slapped in the face by a wave. She coughed and sputtered, struggling to stay afloat. A shadow passed over her, blacking out the sky. Then her hand struck something, a familiar grippy surface. Her hoverboard had come back to her, just the way it always did when she spilled. The crash bracelets lifted her up until she could grab onto it, her fingers clinging to its knobby surface as she gasped for air. A high-pitched whine came from the nearby shore. Tally blinked away water from her eyes and saw that the rusty machine had landed. Figures were jumping from the machine, spraying white foam at the ground as they crashed through the burning flowers and into the river. They were headed for her. She struggled to climb onto the board. "Wait!" the nearest figure called. Tally rose shakily to her feet, trying to keep steady on the wet surface of the board. Her hard-baked shoes were slippery, and her sodden knapsack seemed to weigh a ton. As she leaned forward, a gloved hand reached up to grab the front of the board. A face came up from the water, wearing some sort of mask. Huge eyes stared up at her. She stomped at the hand, crunching the fingers. They slipped off, but her weight was thrown too far forward, and the board tipped its nose into the water. Tally tumbled into the river again. Hands grabbed at her, pulling her away from the hoverboard. She was hoisted out of the water and onto a broad shoulder. She caught glimpses of masked faces, huge, inhuman eyes staring at her unblinkingly. Bug eyes. Bug eyes. They pulled her to the shore and out of the water, hauling her to the flying machine. Tally's lungs felt full of water and smoke. She could hardly take a breath without a racking cough shaking her whole body.
"Put her down. Where the hell did she come from? Give her some O2.
They flopped Tally onto her back on the ground, which was thick with white foam. The one who'd carried her pulled off his bug-eyed mask, and Tally blinked. He was a pretty, a new pretty, every bit as beautiful as Paris. The man plunged the mask over her face. Tally fought weakly for a moment, but then cold, pure air surged into her lungs. Her head grew light as she gratefully sucked it down. He pulled the mask off.
"Not too much. You'll hyperventilate."
She tried to speak, but could only cough.
"It's getting bad," another figure said. "Jenks wants to take her back up."
"Jenks can wait." Tally cleared her throat. "My board." The man smiled beautifully and glanced up.
"It's headed over. Hey, somebody stick that thing to the chopper."
"What's your name, kid?"
"Tally." Cough. "Well, Tally, are you ready to move? The fire won't wait."
She cleared her throat and coughed again.
"I guess so."
"Okay, come on." The man helped her up and pulled her toward the machine. She found herself pushed inside, where the noise was much less, crowded into the back with three others in bug-eyed masks. A door slammed shut. The machine rumbled, and then Tally felt it lift from the ground.
"My board!"
"Relax, kid. We got it." The woman pulled her mask off. She was another young pretty. Tally wondered if these were the people in the clue. The firebug eyes. Was she supposed to be looking for them?
"Is she going to make it?" A voice popped through the cabin. "She'll live, Jenks. Make the usual detour and work the fire a little on the way home."
Tally looked down as the machine climbed. Their flight followed the course of the river, and she saw the fire spreading across to the other shore, driven by the wind of its passage. Occasionally, the craft would shoot out a gout of flame. She looked at the faces of the crew. For new pretties, they seemed so determined, so focused on their task at hand. But their actions were madness.
"What are you guys doing?" she said.
"A little burning."
"I can see that. But why?"
"To save the world, kid. But hey, we're real sorry about your getting in the way."
They called themselves Rangers. The one who'd pulled her up from the river was called Tonk. They all spoke with an accent, and came from a city Tally had never heard of.
"It's not too far from here," Tonk said, "but we Rangers spend most of our time out in the wild. The fire helicopters are based in the mountains."
"The fire what's?"
"Helicopters. That's what you're sitting in."
She looked around at the rattling machine and shouted over the noise.
"It's so rusty." "Yeah, vintage stuff. A few pieces of it are almost 200 years old. We copy the parts as they wear out."
"But why?"
"You can fly it anywhere, with or without a magnetic grid. And it's the perfect thing for spreading fires. The rusty sure knew how to make a mess."
Tally shook her head. "And you spread fires because..." He smiled and lifted one of her shoes, pulling a crushed but unburned flower from the sole.
"Because of Phragmopedium panthera," he said.
"Excuse me?"
"This flower used to be one of the rarest plants in the world, a white tiger orchid. In rusty days, a single bulb was worth more than a house."
"A house? But there's zillions of them."
"You noticed?"
He held up the flower, staring into its delicate mouth.
"About 300 years ago, some rusty figured a way to engineer the species to adapt to wider conditions. She messed with the genes to make them propagate more easily."
"Why?"
"The usual, to trade them for lots of stuff. But she succeeded a little too well. Look down."
Tally peered out of the window. The machine had gained altitude and left the firestorm behind. Below were endless fields of white, interrupted only by a few barren patches.
"Looks like she did a good job.
So what? They're nice."
"One of the most beautiful plants in the world. But too successful. They turned into the ultimate weed. What we call a monoculture. They crowd out every other species, choke trees and grass, and nothing eats them except one species of hummingbird, which feeds on their nectar. But the hummingbirds nest in trees."
"There aren't any trees down there," Tally said. "Just the orchids."
"Exactly. That's what monoculture means. Everything the same. After enough orchids build up in an area, there aren't enough hummingbirds to pollinate them. You know, to spread the seeds."
"Yeah," Tally said. "I know about the birds and the bees."
Sure you do, kid.
So the orchids eventually die out, victims of their own success, leaving a wasteland behind. Biological zero. We rangers try to keep them from spreading. We've tried poison, engineered diseases, predators to target the hummingbirds, but fire is the only thing that really works. He turned the orchid over in his hand and held up a fire starter, letting the flame lick into its mouth.
Have to be careful, you know?
Tally noticed the other rangers were cleaning their boots and uniforms, searching for any trace of flowers among the mud and foam. She looked down at the endless white. And you've been doing this for
almost 300 years. The Rusties started the job, after they figured out what they'd done. But we'll never win. All we can hope to do is contain the weed.
Tally sat back, shaking her head, coughing once more. The flowers were so beautiful, so delicate and unthreatening, but they choked everything around them. The ranger leaned forward, handing her his canteen. She took it and drank gratefully.
You're headed to the smoke, aren't you?
Tally swallowed some water the wrong way and sputtered.
Yeah, how'd you know? Come on. An ugly waiting around in the flowers with a hoverboard and a survival kit?
Oh, yeah. Tally remembered the clue. Look in the flowers for firebug eyes. They must have seen uglies before.
We help the Smokies out, they help us out, Tonk said. They're crazy, if you ask me, living rough and staying ugly. But they know more about the wild than most city pretties. It's kind of admirable, really.
Yeah, she said. I guess so.
He frowned. You guess so, but you're headed there. Aren't you sure?
Tally realized that this was where the lie started. She could hardly tell the rangers the truth, that she was a spy, an infiltrator.
Of course I'm sure. Well, we'll be setting you down soon.
In the smoke?
He frowned again. Don't you know? The location's a big secret. Smokies don't trust pretties. Not even us rangers. We'll take you to the usual spot, and you know the rest, right?
She nodded.
Sure.
Just testing you. The helicopter landed in a swirl of dust, the white flowers bending in a wide circle around the touchdown spot.
Thanks for the ride, Tally said. Good luck, Tonk said. Hope you like the smoke.
Me too.
But if you change your mind, Tally, we're always looking for volunteers in the Rangers.
Tally frowned. What's a volunteer?
The ranger smiled. That's when you pick your own job.
Oh, right. Tally had heard that you could do that in some cities.
Maybe. In the meantime, keep up the good work. Speaking of which, you're not setting any fires around here, are you? The rangers laughed and Tonk said, We just work the edges of the infestation to keep the flowers from spreading. This spot is right smack in the middle. No hope left.
Tally looked around. There wasn't a glimpse of any color but white as far as she could see. The sun had set an hour ago, but the orchids glowed like ghosts in the moonlight. Now that she knew what they were, the sight chilled Tally.
What did he call it?
Biological zero.
Great.
She jumped out of the helicopter and yanked her hoverboard from the magnetic rack next to the door. She backed away, careful to crouch as the rangers had warned her to. The machine whined back to life, and she peered upward into the shimmering disk. Tonk had explained that a pair of thin blades spinning so quickly that you couldn't see them carried the craft through the air. She wondered if he'd been kidding. It just looked like a typical force field to her. The wind grew crazed again as the machine reared up, and she held onto her board tightly, waving until the aircraft disappeared into the dark sky. She sighed. Alone again. Looking around, she wondered how she could find the Smokies in this featureless desert of orchids. Then wait on the bald head until it's light, was the last line of Shay's note. Tally scanned the horizon, and a relieved smile broke onto her face. A tall, round hill rose up not far away. It must have been one of the places where the engineered flowers had first taken root. The top half of the hill was dying. Nothing left but bare soil, ruined by the orchids. The cleared area looked just like a bald head. She reached the bald hilltop in a few hours. Her hoverboard was useless there, but the hiking was easy in the new shoes the rangers had given her, her own so burned that they had fallen apart in the helicopter. Tonk had also filled her purifier with water. The ride in the helicopter had begun to dry out Tally's clothing, and the hike had done the rest. Her knapsack had survived the dumping. Even the spog bowl remained dry in its waterproof bag. The only thing lost to the river was Shay's note, reduced to a soggy wad of paper in her pocket. But she had almost made it. As she looked out from the hilltop, Tally realized that, except for the burn blisters on her hands and feet, some bruises on her knees, and a few locks of hair that had gone up in smoke, she had pretty much survived. As long as the Smokies knew where to find her and believed her story that she was an ugly coming to join them and didn't figure out that she was actually a spy, then everything was just great. She waited on the hill, exhausted but unable to sleep, wondering if she could really do what Dr. Cable wanted. The pendant around her neck had also survived the ordeal. Tally doubted a little water would have ruined the device, but she wouldn't know until she reached the smoke and activated it. She hoped for a moment that the pendant wouldn't work. Maybe one of the bumps along the way had broken its little eye reader, and it would never send its message back to Dr. Cable. But that was hardly worth hoping for. Without the pendant, Tally was stuck out here in the wild forever. Ugly for life. Her only way home was to betray her friend. Lies. A couple of hours after dawn, they came and got her. Tally saw them hiking through the orchids, four figures carrying hoverboards, and dressed all in white. Broad white hats in a dappled pattern hid their heads, and she realized that if they ducked down into the flowers, they would practically disappear. These people went to a lot of trouble to stay hidden. As the party drew close, she recognized Shay's pigtails bobbing under one of the hats and waved frantically. Tally had planned to take the note literally and wait on the hilltop, but at the sight of her friend, she grabbed her board and dashed down to meet them. Infiltrator or not, Tally couldn't wait to see Shay. The tall, lanky form broke from the others and ran toward her, and the two embraced, laughing. "It is you. I knew it was." "Of course it is, Shay. I couldn't stand missing you." Which was pretty much true. Shay couldn't stop smiling. "When we spotted the helicopter last night, most people said it had to be another group. They said you'd taken too long and that I should give up." Tally tried to smile back, wondering if she hadn't made up enough time. She could hardly admit starting 4 days after her 16th birthday. "I kind of got turned around. Could your note have been any more obscure?" "Oh," Shay's face fell. "I thought you'd understand it." Unable to bear Shay blaming herself, Tally shook her head. "Actually, the note was okay. I'm just a moron. And the biggest problem was when I got to the flowers. The rangers didn't see me at first, and I almost got roasted." Shay's eyes widened as she took in Tally's scratched and sunburned face, the blisters on her hands, and her patchy, scorched hair. "Oh, Tally, you look like you went through a war zone." "Just about." The other three uglies walked up. They stood back a bit, one boy holding a device in the air. "She's carrying a bug," he said. Tally's heart froze. "A what?" Shay gently took Tally's board from her and handed it to the boy. He swept his device across it, nodded, and pulled one of the stabilizer fins off. "Here it is." "They sometimes put trackers on the long-range boards," Shay said, trying to find the smoke. "Oh, I'm really... I didn't know, I swear."
Relax, Tally, the boy said. It's not your fault. Shay's board had one too.
That's why we meet you newbies down here.
He held up the bug. We'll take it away in some random direction and stick it on a migrating bird. See how the specials like South America.
The Smokies all laughed.
He stepped closer and swept the device up and down her body. Tally flinched when it passed close to the pendant. But he smiled.
It's okay. You're clean.
Tally sighed with relief. Of course, she hadn't activated the pendant yet, so his device couldn't detect it. The other bug was just Dr. Cable's way of misleading the Smokies, getting them to drop their guard. Tally herself was the real danger.
Shay stepped up next to the boy, taking his hand in hers.
Tally, this is David. The boy smiled again. He was an ugly, but he had a nice smile, and his face held a kind of confidence that Tally had never seen in an ugly before. Maybe he was a few years older than she was. Tally had never watched anyone mature naturally past age 16. She wondered how much of being ugly was just an awkward age. Of course, David was hardly a pretty. His smile was crooked, and his forehead too high. But, uglies or not, it was good to see Shay, David, all of them. Except for a couple of stunned hours with the Rangers, she hadn't seen human faces in what seemed like years.
So, what have you got?
Huh? Croy was one of the other uglies who'd come to meet her. He looked older than 16, but it didn't suit him like it did David. Some people needed the operation more than others. He reached out a hand for her knapsack.
Oh, thanks.
Her shoulders were sore from being strapped to the thing for the last week. He pulled it open as they hiked, looking inside. Purifier. Position finder. Croy pulled out the waterproof bag and opened it.
Spog bowl! Yum!
Tally groaned.
You can have it.
His eyes widened.
I can?
Shay pulled the knapsack away from him.
No, you can't.
Listen, I've eaten that stuff 3 times a day for the past, what seems like forever, Tally said.
Yeah, but dehydrated food's hard to get in the smoke, Shay explained. You should save it to trade.
Trade? Tally frowned. What do you mean?
In the city, uglies might trade chores or stuff they'd stolen. But trade food?
Shay laughed. You'll get used to the idea. In the smoke, things don't just come out of the wall. You've got to hang on to the stuff you brought with you. Don't go giving it away to anyone who asks. Shay glared at Croy, who looked down sheepishly.
I was going to give her something for it, he insisted.
Sure you were, David said. Tally noticed his hand on Shay's shoulder, touching her softly as they hiked. She remembered the way Shay had always talked about David, kind of dreamily. Maybe it wasn't just the promise of freedom that had brought her here. They reached the edge of the flowers, a dense growth of trees and brush that started at the foot of a towering mountain.
How do you keep the orchids from spreading? Tally asked.
David's eyes lit up, as if this was his favorite subject.
This old-growth forest stops them. It's been around for centuries, probably even before the Rusties.
It's got lots and lots of species, Shay said, so it's strong enough to keep out the weed.
She looked at David for approval.
The rest of this land used to be farms or grazing pasture, he continued, gesturing back at the expanse of white behind them. The Rusties had already broken its back before the weed arrived.
A few minutes into the forest, Tally realized why the orchids were no match for it. The tangled brush and thick trees were knotted together into an impassable wall on either side. Even on the narrow path, she was constantly shoving past branches and twigs, tripping over roots and rocks. She'd never seen any woodlands this raw and inhospitable. Vines dotted with cruel thorns ran through the semi-darkness like barbed wire.
You guys live here?
Shay laughed. Don't worry, we've got a ways to go. We're just making sure you weren't followed. The smoke's much higher, where the trees aren't so intense.
but the creek's coming up. We'll be on board soon.
Good, Tali said. Her feet were already chafing in the new shoes, but they were warmer than her destroyed grippies, she realized, and were better for hiking. She wondered what would have happened if the rangers hadn't given them to her.
How do you get new shoes in the smoke? Trade someone all your food? Make them yourself?
She looked down at the feet ahead of her, David's, and saw that his shoes did look handmade, like a couple of pieces of leather crudely sewn together. Strangely, though, he moved gracefully through the undergrowth, silent and sure, while the rest of them crashed along like elephants. The very idea of making a pair of shoes by hand boggled her mind.
It didn't matter, Tali reminded herself, taking a deep breath. Once in the smoke, she could activate the pendant and be home within a day, maybe within hours. All the food and clothes she would ever need, hers for the asking. Her face pretty at long last, and Paris, and all their old friends around her. Finally, this nightmare would be over. Soon the sound of running water filled the forest, and they reached a small clearing. David pulled his device out again, pointing it back toward the path.
Still nothing. He grinned at Tali. Congratulations, you're one of us now.
Shay giggled and hugged Tali again as the others readied their boards.
I still can't believe you came. I thought I'd messed everything up, waiting so long to tell you about running away. And I was so stupid, getting into a fight instead of just telling you what I was going to do.
Tali shook her head. You said everything already. I just wasn't listening. Once I realized you were serious, I needed a chance to think about it. It just took me a while. Every minute, until the last night before my birthday. She took a deep breath, wondering why she was saying all this. Lying to Shay when she didn't really have to. She should just shut up, get to the smoke, and get it over with. But Tali found herself continuing. Then I realized I'd never see you again if I didn't come. And I'd always wonder.
The last part was true, at least.
As they boarded higher up into the mountain, the creek widened, cutting an archway of trees into the dense forest. The gnarled, smaller trees became taller pines, the undergrowth thinning, the brook breaking into occasional rapids. Shay cried out as she rode through the spray of churning white water.
I've been dying to show you this, and the really good rapids are on the other side.
Eventually, they left the creek, following a vein of iron over a ridge. From the top, they looked down into a small valley that was mostly clear of forest. Shay held Tali's hand.
There it is. Home.
The smoke lay below them. The model. The smoke really was smoky. Open fires dotted the valley, surrounded by small groups of people. The scents of wood smoke and cooking drifted up to Tali, smells that made her think of camping and outdoor parties. In addition to the smoke, there was a morning mist in the air, a white finger creeping down into the valley from a bank of clouds nestled against the mountain higher up. A few solar panels glimmered feebly, gathering what sun was reflected from the mist. Garden plots were planted in random spots between the buildings, 20 or so one-story structures made from long planks of wood. There was wood everywhere, in fences, as cooking spits, laid down in walkways over muddy patches, and in big stacks by the fires. Tali wondered where they had found so much wood. Then she saw the stumps at the edge of the settlement and gasped.
Trees, she whispered in horror. You cut down trees.
Shay squeezed her hand. Only in this valley. It seems weird at first, but it's the way the pre-Rusties lived too, you know? And we're planting more on the other side of the mountain, pushing into the orchids.
Okay, Tali said doubtfully.
She saw a team of uglies moving a felled tree, pushing it along on a pair of hoverboards.
There's a grid?
Shay nodded happily. Just in places. We pulled up a bunch of metal from a railroad,
like the track you came up the coast on. We've laid out a few hover paths throughout the smoke, and eventually we'll do the whole valley. I've been working on that project. We bury a piece of junk every few paces. Like everything here, it's tougher than you'd think. You wouldn't believe how much a knapsack full of steel weighs. David and the others were already headed down, gliding single file between two rows of rocks painted a glowing orange. That's the hover path? Tally asked.
Yeah, come on. I'll take you down to the library. You've got to meet the boss.
The boss wasn't really in charge here, Shay explained. He just acted like it, especially to newbies. But he was in command of the library, the largest of the buildings in the settlement's central square. The familiar smell of dusty books overwhelmed Tally at the library door, and as she looked around, she realized that books were pretty much all the library had. No big air screen, not even private work screens. Just mismatched desks and chairs and rows of bookshelves. Shay led her to the center of it all, where a round kiosk was inhabited by a small figure talking on an old-fashioned handphone. As they drew closer, Tally felt her heart starting to pound. She'd been dreading what she was about to see. The boss was an old ugly. Tally had spotted a few from the distance on the way in, but had managed to turn her eyes away. But here was the wrinkled, veined, discolored, shuffling, horrific truth right before her eyes. His milky eyes glared at them as he berated whoever was on the phone, in a rattling voice and waving one claw at them to go away. Shay giggled and pulled her toward the shelves.
He'll get to us eventually. There's something I want to show you first.
That poor man. The boss? Pretty wild, huh? He's like 40. Wait until you talk to him. Tally swallowed, trying to erase the image of his sagging features from her mind. These people were insane to tolerate that. To want it. But his face, Tally said. That's nothing. Check these out. Shay sat her down at a table, turned to a shelf, and pulled out a handful of volumes in protective covers. She plonked them in front of Tally.
Books on paper? What about them?
Not books. They're called magazines, Shay said. She opened one and pointed. Its strangely glossy pages were covered with pictures of people. Uglies. Tally's eyes widened as Shay turned the pages, pointing and giggling. She'd never seen so many wildly different faces before. Mouths and eyes and noses of every imaginable shape, all combined insanely on people of every page. And the bodies. Some were grotesquely fat, or weirdly over-muscled, or uncomfortably thin. And almost all of them had wrong, ugly proportions. But instead of being ashamed of their deformities, the people were laughing and kissing and posing, as if all the pictures had been taken at some huge party. Who are these freaks?
They aren't freaks, Shay said. The weird thing is, these are famous people.
Famous for what? Being hideous?
No, they're sports stars, actors, artists. The men with stringy hair are musicians, I think. The really ugly ones are politicians, and someone told me the fatties are mostly comedians.
That's funny, as in strange, Tally said. So this is what people looked like before the first pretty? How could anyone stand to open their eyes?
Yeah, it's scary at first. But the weird thing is, if you keep looking at them, you kind of get used to it.
Shay turned to a full-page picture of a woman wearing only some kind of form-fitting underwear, like a lacy swimsuit.
What the? Tally said.
Yeah. The woman looked like she was starving, her ribs thrusting out from her sides, her legs so thin that Tally wondered how they didn't snap under her weight. Her elbows and pelvic bones looked sharp as needles. But there she was, smiling and proudly bearing her body, as if she'd just had the operation and didn't realize they'd sucked out way too much fat. The funny thing was, her face was closer to being pretty than any of the rest. She had the big eyes, smooth skin, and small nose, but her cheekbones were too tight, the skull practically visible beneath her flesh. What on earth is she? A model. Which is what? Kind of like a professional pretty. I guess when everyone else is ugly, being pretty is sort of like your job. And she's in her underwear because... Tally began, and then a memory flashed into her mind. She's got that disease, the one the teachers always told us about.
Probably. I always thought they made that up to scare us.
Back in the days before the operation, Tally remembered a lot of people, especially young girls, became so ashamed at being fat that they stopped eating. They'd lose weight too quickly, and some would get stuck and would keep losing weight until they wound up looking like this model. Some even died, they said at school. That was one of the reasons they'd come up with the operation. No one got the disease anymore, since everyone knew at 16 they'd turn beautiful. In fact, most people pigged out just before they turned, knowing it would all be sucked away. Tally stared at the picture and shivered. Why go back to this?
Spooky, huh? Shay turned away. I'll see if the boss is ready yet.
Before she disappeared around a corner, Tally noticed how skinny Shay was. Not disease skinny, just ugly skinny. She'd never eaten much. Tally wondered if, here in the smoke, Shay's under-eating would get worse and worse until she wound up starving herself. Tally fingered the pendant. This was her chance. Might as well get it over with now. These people had forgotten what the old world was really like. Sure, they were having a great time camping out and playing hide-and-seek, and living out here was a great trick on the cities. But somehow they'd forgotten that the Rusties had been insane, almost destroying the world in a million different ways. This starving, almost pretty, was only one of them. Why go back to that? They were already cutting down trees here. Tally popped open the heart pendant, looking down into the little glowing aperture where the laser waited to read her eye print. She brought it closer, her hand shaking. It was foolish to wait. This would only get harder. And what choice did she have? Tally, he's almost... Tally snapped close the pendant and shoved it into her shirt. Shay smiled slyly.
I noticed that before. What gives?
What do you mean?
Oh, come on. You never wore anything like that before. I leave you alone for 2 weeks and you get all romantic?
Tally swallowed, looking down at the silver heart.
I mean, it's a really nice necklace. Beautiful.
But who gave it to you, Tally? Tally found she couldn't bring herself to lie. Someone. Just someone. Shay rolled her eyes.
Last minute fling, huh?
I always thought you were saving yourself for Paris. It's not like that, it's... Why not tell her? Tally asked herself. She'd figure it out when the specials came roaring in anyway. If she knew, Shay could at least prepare herself before this fantasy world came tumbling down. I have to tell you something.
Sure.
My coming here is kind of... The thing is, when I went to get my...
What are you doing?
Tally jumped at the craggy voice. It was like an old, broken version of Dr. Cable's, a rusty razor blade drawn across her nerves.
Those magazines are over 3 centuries old, and you're not wearing gloves.
The boss shuffled over to where Tally was sitting, producing white cotton gloves and pulling them on. He reached around her to close the one she was reading.
Your fingers are covered with very nasty acids, young lady. You'll rot away those magazines if you're not careful. Before you go nosing around in the collection, you come to me.
Sorry, boss, Shay said. My fault.
I don't doubt it, he snapped, reshelving
the magazines with elegant, careful movements at odds with his harsh words.
Now, young lady, I suppose you're here for a work assignment.
Work? Tally said.
They both looked down at her puzzled expression, and Shay burst into laughter.
Work. The Smokies all had lunch together, just like at an ugly dorm. The long tables had clearly been cut from the hearts of trees. They showed knots and whorls, the wavy tracks of grain ran down their entire length. They were rough and beautiful, but Tally couldn't get over the thought that the trees had been taken alive. She was glad when Shay and David took her outside to the cooking fire, where a group of younger uglies hung out. It was a relief to get away from the felled trees and from the disturbing older uglies. Out here, at least, any of the Smokies could pass as a senior. Tally didn't have much experience in judging an ugly's age, but she turned out to be more or less right. Two had just arrived from another city and weren't even 16 yet. The other three, Croy, Ride, and Asterix, were friends of Shay's from the group that had run away together before Tally and Shay first met. Here in the Smoke only 5 months, Shay's friends already had a hint of David's self-assurance. Somehow, they carried the authority of middle pretties without the firm jaw, the subtly lined eyes, or the elegant clothing. They spent lunch talking about projects they were up to. A canal to bring a branch of the creek closer to the Smoke. New patterns for the sheep wool their sweaters were made from. A new latrine. Tally wondered what a latrine was. They seemed so serious, as if their lives were really a complicated trick that had to be planned and replanned every day. The food was serious, too, and was piled on their plates in serious quantities. It was heavier than Tally was used to, the taste too rich, like whenever her food history class tried to cook their own meals. But the strawberries were sweet without sugar. And although it seemed weird to eat it plain, the Smokies' bread had its own flavor without anything added. Of course, Tally would have happily devoured anything that wasn't Spogbowl. She didn't ask what was in the stew, though. The thought of dead trees was enough to deal with in one day. As they emptied their plates, Shay's friends started pumping Tally for news from the city. Dorm sports results, soap opera storylines, city politics. Had she heard of anyone else running away? Tally answered their questions as best she could. No one tried to hide their homesickness. Their faces looked years younger as they remembered old friends and old tricks. Then Asterix asked about her journey here to the Smoke. It was pretty easy, really, once I got the hang of Shay's directions.
Not that easy. Took you, what, 10 days?
David asked.
You left the night before our birthday, right? Shay said.
Stroke of midnight, Tally said.
9 days. And a half. Croy frowned. It took a while for the Rangers to find you, didn't it?
I guess so. And they almost roasted me when they did. They were doing a huge burn that got out of control.
Really? Whoa.
Shay's friends looked impressed. My board almost burned. I had to save it and jump in the river.
Is that what happened to your face? Ride asked.
Tally touched the peeling skin on her nose.
Well, that's kind of sunburn, she almost said.
But the other faces were rapt. She'd been alone so long, Tally found herself enjoying being the center of attention. The flames were all around me, she said. My shoes melted crossing this big patch of burning flowers. Shay whistled.
Incredible. That's weird. The Rangers usually keep an eye out for us, David said.
Well, I guess they missed me. Tally decided not to go into the fact that she'd intentionally hidden her hoverboard. Anyway, I was in the river, and I'd never even seen a helicopter, except for the day before, and this thing came thundering out of the Smoke, driving the fire toward me. And of course, I had no idea the Rangers were the good guys. I thought they were rusty pyromaniacs risen from the grave.
Everyone laughed, and Tally felt herself enjoying the warmth of the group's attention.
It was like telling everyone at dorm about a really successful trick, but much better, because she really had survived a life-or-death situation. David and Shay were hanging on to every word. Tali was glad she hadn't activated the pendant yet. She could hardly sit here enjoying the Smokies' admiration if she'd just betrayed them all. She decided to wait until tonight, when she was alone, to do what she had to.
"That must have been creepy," David said, his voice pulling her away from uncomfortable thoughts. "Being alone in the orchids for all those days, just waiting."
She shrugged. "I thought they were kind of pretty. I didn't know about the whole superweed thing." David frowned at Shay.
"Didn't you tell her anything in your note?"
Shay flushed.
"You told me not to write anything that would give the smoke away, so I put it in code. Sort of." "It sounds like your code almost got her killed," David said, and Shay's face fell.
He turned to Tali.
"Hardly anyone ever makes the trip alone. Not their first time out of the city."
"I'd been out of the city before." Tali put her arm around Shay's shoulder comfortingly. "I was fine. It was just a bunch of pretty flowers to me. And I started with 2 weeks of food."
"Why did you steal all Spogbol?" Croy asked. "You must love the stuff."
The others joined in his laughter. Tali tried to smile. "I didn't even notice when I pinched it. 3 Spogbols a day for 9 days. I could hardly stomach the stuff after day 2, but you get so hungry." They nodded. They all knew about hard traveling. And hard work, too, apparently.
Tali had already noticed how much everyone had consumed for lunch.
Maybe Shay wasn't so likely to get the not-eating disease. She had cleaned her heaping plate.
"Well, I'm glad you made it," David said.
He reached across and touched the scratches on Tally's face softly.
"Looks like you had more adventures than you're telling us."
Tali swallowed and shrugged, hoping she looked modest. Shay smiled and hugged David.
"I knew you'd think Tali was awesome."
A bell rang across the grounds, and they hurried to finish their food.
"What's that?"
she asked.
David grinned. "That's back to work."
"You're coming with us," Shay said.
"Don't worry, it won't kill you."
On the way to work, Shay explained more about the long, flat roller coasters called railroads. Some stretched across the entire continent, one small part of the rusty legacy still scarring the land. But unlike most ruins, the railroads were actually useful, and not just for hoverboarding. They were the main source of metal for the Smokies. David had discovered a new railroad track a year or so earlier. It didn't run anywhere useful, so he had drawn up a plan to plunder it for metal and build more hover paths in and around the valley. Shay had been working on the project since she'd come to the smoke 10 days before. 6 of them took their boards up and out the other side of the valley, down a stream churning with white water and along a razor-sharp ridge filled with iron ore. From there, Tali finally understood how far up the mountain she'd come since leaving the coast. The whole continent seemed to be spread out before them. A thin bank of clouds below the ridge mirrored the heavier layer overhead, but forests, grasslands, and the shimmering arcs of rivers were visible through the misty veil. The sea of white orchids could still be glimpsed from this side of the mountain, glowing like an encroaching desert in the sun.
"Everything's so big," Tali murmured.
"That's what you can never tell from inside," Shay said, "how small the city is. How small they have to make everyone to keep them trapped there."
Tali nodded, but she imagined all those people let loose in the countryside below, cutting down trees and killing things for food, crashing across the landscape like some risen rusty machine. Still, she wouldn't have traded anything for this moment, standing there and looking down at the plains spread out below. Tali had spent the last 4 years staring at the skyline of New Pretty Town, thinking it was the most beautiful sight in the world. But she didn't think so anymore. Lower down and halfway around the mountain, another river crossed David's railroad track. The route there from the smoke twisted in all directions, taking advantage of veins of iron, rivers, and dry creek beds. But they never had to leave their boards.